All right. Welcome back, everybody. If you're watching or listening, you may see or hear some baby goats in the scene today. Also some dogs and a stray cat as well. But everybody is pretty acquainted with Dr. Serrano. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. I was looking forward to seeing you. I'm glad you just went to Winterstrom. How was it?
Awesome. Winterstrom was incredible as usual. Bert Soren puts on a class act. Is over 200 humans in general. Everybody was shooting guns, shooting bows, competing, bonfire talks, all the works. But it was good.
The question, what kind of humans?
mostly outdoor humans, strength and conditioning, but it's a lot of the archery world and then ex-military and then a lot of the brands that brands and supplements and packs and stuff that support them. So it was all like kind of the owners of those companies. And then everybody usually learns a different skill, whether it's in the survival world or like kind of vehicle MacGyvering. And then it's always bow hunting. There's some of the best bow hunters in the world are there teaching technique and fundamentals. And then same thing with the rifle. It's all military instructors like Buck and Brady, some of the best guys in the industry.
I don't want to sell anything, but you know, they have a 1 mile range for shooting, which is insane. They also have, I don't know if you guys went through the course.
Yep.
In which you have to do push-up, pull-ups, you know, and then shoot, which is not the same when you're running, exercising, and you have to hold a gun. Now you're shaking because you just finished a set, you know, which, I mean, it's kind of tough.
It's fun. What he's talking about is, so basically all the skills you acquire and work on for the first, like, day and a half, 2 days. On the last day, we do a competition involving everything where they have a 20-target bow hunting course with all the 3D animals, and then they have this mile-long gun range, and they have an outdoor weight room. They have pistol bays. They have workout equipment, pull-up bars, plates, everything along this whole trail anyway, so everybody competes. Jeez. Those are the goats kicking around. But this year, they did a new one, and this was like the start, because the start last year was a kayak race around a buoy, and then this year one of the swimmer from each team to figure out what order you go in. We had to swim about 50 yards out and back around a buoy in the cold water, and I end up on my team being one of those swimmers. And it was terrible. Like,
Brian is not a great swimmer, by the way. That's one of the few things that he's not.
I was up there coaching sauna and ice, and I've been coaching for like 6 hours at this point, and then Jeremy Ebert, buddy of mine, college roommate, awesome athlete from Northwestern, but he basically said, "Nope, you're up." And so I went from like 90 seconds from coaching, stripping down to swimming, and not ready at all. I've been on the road for 2 weeks. I'm making excuses, but after I got around the buoy, shoulders locked up. Yeah.
Seriously? So Bert, by the way, 50 yards for people who don't know what that is, that's half a football field.
Yeah.
So be aware that it's not that close. It's kind of far.
No, and the water was cold, so I'm saying that's a factor too, because Bert got buried too. A lot of people, like, it took some life out of him. And then so after my shoulders went, I switched to breaststroke. And then my quads started to cramp up, and then I'm just like praying until I get to shallow enough to run it in, and ran it in. I had to go like lay down and down regulate underneath the tree for like 20 minutes.
How deep is it?
I mean, like, you can walk out, like, it's like you're walking through muck until you get to where you have to swim, and it's probably like 20 yards to that point. So when I swam back about 15, 20 yards out, I was able to stick my feet in the muck and finish it up.
Okay.
But it was cool. But yeah, no, like, me and Bert were like chugging aminos, B12 vitamins. We were doing everything to recoup because the full competition then started like 90 minutes later. But yeah, anyways, awesome experience. It's just, I mean, it's always a good reminder, like, just be around good people, be around people that are movers and shakers and entrepreneurs.
If you have not been into that, you have to go. It's an amazing experience. You get to meet very, very special people. Maybe, you know, you meet NFL, baseball players, you meet everything, but you meet people that have been defending this country, and they teach you, and they always want to teach you, which is insane. And when you go there, you're shooting other people's guns, which even makes it better, you know? Yeah. You're learning to use somebody else's gun that is specifically to go blow somebody up, you know? It is very, very cool. The sad part is I couldn't go this year because we're moving, and hopefully the new setup that Brian has now looks super homely. And I mean, we're here under the fire, so which is kind of nice.
Yeah, I just think with the two goats in the scene, two dogs, and it just, you were definitely at the official Serrano farm. and damn, that goat just farted in my face. Jeez. Oh, that's disgusting. That smells terrible. Anyways, besides the point. One of the coolest mixes is I've been coaching a bunch of military guys, but also just being around and having the campfire conversations where you get a few drinks, everything's kind of everything's just kind of flowing. And then, that's probably been the biggest kind of change in my direction as far as coaching, understanding, even like the kind of like just taking your freedoms for granted. I did that for 30 years of my life. And then now I'm in this opportunity to give back and then also hear the stories and understand the sacrifice, understand the repercussions of conflict and things like that.
And that's one thing I tried to explain to you before, that, you know, athletes are great, but these people are giving their lives for their country, which is a total different, you know, situation and something that is not glorified, you know, and which really should be glorified. I remember my father went to World War II, and he used to tell me, you know, people that need to be glorified are not glorified anymore. Now a running back is glorified, right? And my dad said, you need to glorify your teachers that make a difference in your life later, coaches, and those people that military that save your life. And I never thought about it, but, you know, after I get older, and I used to tell you this already, I say, yes, that's the way it should be. And I'm lucky enough that I have many military, I would say, friends and patients, and I see what they go through. And, you know, one thing that people don't understand is PTSD, which can be emotional, can be physical. I mean, I see people that survive intact physically, but absolutely destroyed mentally, which the military people, all the up high politicians don't care. You know, oh, I just give you good drugs and you be go home and you'll be okay. Or let me fight you for giving you a few bucks. You know, I think that once you go to war, you should not pay taxes, period. And for the rest of your life, you should be taken care of, which we don't. And I wish there's a way to change that, but there's no way to change that unless the politicians really get involved, which, I mean, they will not do it because they should have done it by now. But, you know,
do you know if they do that in any other country?
Well, remember this, one of the biggest countries is Israel, because you have to serve after high school for 2 years. They do take care of you up to a point. I don't think some of the only country in the world that doesn't have a military is Costa Rica. I do know that. I know that in, I know that in Spain, they don't take care of them either. So I do not know how that works. And I wish we were the model for that, but we're not going to be. And unless some military guy becomes president of the United States, then things will change.
Yeah, so, that's kind of where, I mean, just from reading and philosophy and those kind of things, I mean, different cultures past, like Stoicism, the Greeks, and those like kind of more infamous culture or infamous or civilizations, that kind of deal, where they, part of their system was built up for, okay, you grow up to be a warrior.
Spartans.
Yeah, Spartans.
The most famous ones.
But there's a couple other cultures. Some of the, man, I can't remember if it's the Mongolians or somebody.
That's true.
Somebody
that's
in true. Asia where they, again, they just, the life transitioned.
The best soldier was the best guy treated in the country.
Yeah, and then, but then, so back to the Spartans. I'm not positive the Spartans or the Greeks, whatever, somebody else will know better than I do. But the concept was to experience the whole spectrum of life and allow wisdom to serve its purpose. So as you start as a warrior, then after that you go into business, you become an entrepreneur, you like start a business in general, and then you work into politics because you've done the whole kind of the spectrum. Hopefully you've been a parent or something by then too, so you understand the soldier's perspective, you understand business folks, and like, and then after that you become a philosopher hopefully or something like that. And that this might just be like a speculation scale that people like said how it used to be in the old days, but I do think that's cool, and because like it's always intrigued me to, I mean, even potentially serve in the military.
You know, I'm going to ask you a question, but I don't know if you know the answer. Do you know two famous baseball players that served the military and came back and play again?
No, but
Ted Williams.
I was gonna say Mickey Mantle, but
he surfed, flew planes, so the guy had brains and came back and became famous again. I think that MJ. I think that
MJ is a dog, not Michael. MJ Jordan.
Was my dog trying to eat the cat. Another one is, oh my God, how come I forget who the next one is? I think Lou Gehrig's did the same. And that is, yes, Lou Gehrig did it for sure. So these are people that honor, you know, they love their country, and they were still amazing athletes, you know. And you cannot see that anymore, except a few, like, who died during the war.
Pat Tillman. And, yes. And then that's a whole interesting documentary, too, where, like,
yes.
Well, it's have you seen the documentary?
No, I have not.
Well, because, like, obviously he was just pulled to serve, and obviously 9/11 played a role in that, but like they eventually like tried to make him just like a poster boy, not even put him in battle, and he fought it and eventually went into battle, and then he did get killed in action, and they made it like this, I think, a crazy firefight, but it was actually friendly fire.
Yes.
And he never wanted to be this martyr or this, like, again, this poster boy, and his family fought the narrative and got the truth out. And then now one of the best foundations I know is the Pat Tillman Foundation. There's so many people that support him. I think tonight we're recording this on Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday. Six of their like scholars or like part of what their organization supports were part of the coin toss.
Okay.
And they just do that. And then so many people who come out to their, it's like a 5K or a marathon or something like that.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. He's like, I mean, it's been going on for a while. His family's is just savage from what I understand, but besides the point, I do think that I mean the publicity around military, and but even the woes, like you hear, like, because you see the social media push where it's like this many people commit suicide, particularly now you look at the statistics, how they're amplified in special forces, and it's like it's scary, it's super scary, and it's not like it's not going in correlation with our society in general, where depression, anxiety, suicides are up too. And so I think it just kind of gets lost in the mix.
What is how bad it was the last 3 years, which is interesting because people are supposed to spend more time together.
Yeah.
And they were killing themselves, which is incredible what happened. It's kind of funny. A lot of people got into their family. They found out what the value was. A lot of people got new pets because they were able to sit down and take care of them, how hard it works, how hard it is to take care of a pet. You know, now that I am doing that, now I'm back to work, I cannot do it.
Yeah.
And things like that. So it's funny because some of the dog places, they got full again because, I cannot take care of it. I got to go back to work. You know, I cannot do what I thought I was going to do, which makes me sad. But I will say this. I hope that sooner or later, we will pay attention to those military guys. Thank you for their services, by the way. And I say, hey, we need to take care of them. And we have to do it. Why? Because they took care of us. We are here, you and I, sitting on a fireplace, really nice, because of what they have done. And, you know, my son was in the military. He just recently quit to go to pilot school. But he thought that I was going to be disappointed. I said, no, you got to move on. You know, I am the first one on my family that didn't go to the military, which, you know, my nephew's in the military, my niece is in the military. So all those people are like serving our country, hopefully for the right motives, of course. But I want to say thank you to all those military people out there. Thank you for your services. Thank you for keeping me where I am today.
Yeah, I heavily second that. So, but yeah, and it's, again, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but it is something now, because we talk about hyperbarics on the podcast, on the Q&A, and then now the more I get into my own education of the brain health, like brain health combative with mental health and how tied together they are, and now you get into like where, like, I'm a breathwork coach, so where's the oxygen going? Can it get there in general? And now you get into the plasma, the hyperbarics, and all this stuff, and it's just like, everything's massively connected,
insane how connected. You know, I want to tell people this: which is the only emotion that can kill you? Stress, anger. It can actually kill you eventually. Heart disease. The more stressed you are, the higher the probability of you having heart disease. Now, which emotion can save you? Love. You know, it can relax your blood vessels. It can make you feel better. People don't understand that. People have forgotten out the core of the nation and the family and God. But now that doesn't exist as it used to be. But hopefully we should be going back to that. Hopefully in the future.
No, and I like that view on emotion. Like, what's the healthy emotion? What's the unhealthy emotion? What's the, like, the life of emotion? What's the killer in emotion? Because Jesus, goat. Because, hold on.
Just scratch or shoot, leave you alone.
Yeah. Now I lost my thought. But, there's a point there I wanted to hit, but go ahead.
Let me say this. They did a study in the 1940s, and they looked at 25,000 people, or a large number. I'll make it that number. It was so large, I couldn't believe it. And doctors looked at patients to see what the real reason for high blood pressure was. And by the way, then it was 160 when 90 was considered high blood pressure. So it was pretty substantially high. And they looked at everything. They looked at cancers. They looked at everything. And the number one reason for high blood pressure wasn't caffeine. It was stress. 90% of the people that have high blood pressure was just because of stress, which it brings to this, how much does what you do lowers blood pressure, you know?
Yeah,
when you jump on that water, I mean, you're the expert on that. You freaking change your physiology. I mean, you're breathing, well, at least when I jump in, I'm breathing, you know, I'm out of breath because it's so cold, but that allows you breathe more oxygen, you know? It's crazy what it does, but also reduces your stress, believe it or not.
Yeah, and that's where, like, now you get into, like, just the effect of what you're talking about, that fast pace, but, like, you're spending a lot of time on the inhale. Now we get into respiratory sinus arrhythmia, like the inhale accelerates heart rate, exhale, but it's really just like slow. Like you're talking about pace of breath and like respiratory rate. We're breathing a lot faster than we did in the past. And now it's getting crazy into like 20,000 plus breaths a day. And like in my world, I try and make all these things meaningful. Every breath is meaningful. And I go all down my rant of like, if you want a meaningful life, anything, everything's meaningful. And the breath's everywhere in your life, whether you want it to be or not. So it gets really easy to hopefully relate and parallel that impact where like, if you do breathe slower, if you breathe less is my bit. Like if you breathe less than the opponent, you can beat the opponent. But if you breathe less than you did the day before, that means you're more calm, more at peace.
Yes.
And this influences heart rate. And now this starts to influence the psychology, your ability to access parasympathetic tone, vagal tone, things like that. And like, that's where the magic, and it's not rocket surgery. It's literally just like peace. So like, and that's why I really like your basically like hate and anger and how they show up in stress. And I have this really, Brian McKenzie talked about it on my podcast, but this quote makes the most logical sense to me as of late, where it's the sign of a healthy organism is short-lived emotions.
That is very true.
Because like you look at the hate and the anger and people just hold on to it so tight, and all these resentments and these grudges and that kind of thing. And then like that weighs on your soul, but it, like all that stuff shows up in your physiology and it shows up in death. And then an extreme example. And then now like I look at love as like I do think that lasts long too in the aspect, but I think love's more magnetic in that room.
You know, it's kind of funny. I believe a lot in God, but it's, Our Father, that prayer has everything on it. Give our daily bread, nutrition. You know, forgive our sins as we forgive other people's. I mean, right there, he's telling you what you need to do. You need to put God first, which that's what the first component of it is. And if you do that, it's just pretty obvious what happens to you. Most society has a pocket God. And let me explain what that means. When I need God, let me take it out of the pocket. Otherwise, I don't talk to him. I don't call him. Oh, now I'm in a bad situation. How come you're not helping me, God? Well, let's suppose you're married to your wife, right? You don't talk to her whatsoever all day for 3 days, and you want to go screw her. Let me go talk to you right now. I want to see you be screwing or playing with yourself, which I know you're going to be playing by yourself, right? So this is the same thing with God. You have to establish a relationship with it. And I'm not playing a sermon here, but I'm just saying it's a very large component that I think we age. I think God let us age. So we can start becoming more, at least having more wisdom. I said, no, I need to let time for you to grow, because I was stupid until I was 30. Until I was 40. Then my last 20 years is when I think, oh my God, how stupid was I? And, you know, my dad used to tell me this and that. And I used to say to myself, I'd never be like my dad. I'd never be like my dad. Shit. Dude, I'm like my, exactly like my dad, which it was, I mean, the most important figure of my life at that time, or still is, you know. But it's crazy how we forget those things. And I want to tell people out there, if you tell me who you walk with, and I'll tell you who you are. So you're walking with miserable people, you're going to be miserable. If you're walking with people that are hateful, complain all the time, you're going to be one of them. So make sure that you get to meet people that are going to make your life better. At least make your life more comfortable. Always remember, that. So I will say this, try to always look for people that are going to be able to be the reason Brian had to get us because the cat jumped on the table and moved the camera. So that's how many animals we got in one room. So it is crazy that you know, not only having the person that you're with makes a difference on your life, that person can do all kinds of things to you, but make sure that you get somebody that is going to allow you to get better, not worse. Don't be with a complainer because you become a complainer. Don't be with a hater because you become a hateful person. It's pretty obvious what it is. Now, people are going to say, oh, I want to be with rich people because I want to be rich. I didn't say that.
Different concept because I agree. Like, if you're around conflict-oriented people, you're going to be around conflict.
Yes.
And I like that. And I'm just going to regress back to a couple of things you said because just from some of like the church groups I've been in, like the Bible studies and like some of the lessons there would tie into this like emotional connection, but it's a proximity thing. There's proximity in this concept where, again, I think storytelling ties it the closest together where basically this guy in my group, I'm walking out of Wendy's where we met and he comes up, and because I was struggling to comprehend, like I was fighting with my faith at the time or finding it. And he comes out and he points at this guy across the street at a gas station pretty far away. And he goes, is that guy happy or sad? Like, is he crying or is he smiling? I was like, I don't know. He's too far away. He goes, that's how you are with God right now. He goes, if you have to be close enough to God to see if you're hurting or pleasing him, and like not an authoritarian standpoint, but like and same as like the five people you're around is like an overplayed out analogy or whatever that means or whatever it is. But like, how often do we track like that? So like, cause I always like to journal and I usually find different metrics, but like a new metric might be to play, like, who are the five most, like the closest people to me right now in my life? And cause like, that does change. It changes day to day.
Absolutely.
And it's like changes week to weekend, but it definitely changes over time. Cause like my circle has changed drastically in the last year.
Your life, Brian, is like a train. You're going to start with your father and your mother, and that choo-choo train takes off, and they are with you. You stop at multiple stations, and you might pick your friend. You might pick your brother here and there. You might pick your girlfriend. The next station stop, your parents are with you, but why you drop your girlfriend? Your brother picks you up, you drop her on that station. So life is like that. You're going to pick up and drop off. Now, be always smart who you're picking up, who you're dropping off, because that will make a big, huge difference. And I, as a man, and to those people that are hurt, that are married, you are a husband, a lover, a friend, and a father. And if your parents are alive, you're a son. Those are the five components of your life that you need to actually be better at. If you're a woman, then a wife, a lover, a mother, and a friend, and a daughter. So I know that we sometimes, and I have five children, you don't have that yet, hopefully you will. But you know, we as a father, we try to put more importance to your kids for a moment on your life. And then you learn that, no, the two columns of that house are you and your wife. And those are the two most important people. Not your kid, not that your kids are not the most important, but you two are the most important because you make your kids better. So when the two columns are not hard, strong, then the house falls down. Doesn't matter how good you are with the kids. And another thing that I want to tell people now that I have five kids, don't feel sorry for your children. Let me repeat what I'm going to say. Do not feel sorry for your children. And they're going to go out there and say, oh, Serrano is an asshole. No, you show compassion for your children. And let me explain the difference between being sorry for your children and showing compassion. Oh, he broke his leg. Oh, I feel so. Well, why did he break his leg? Because he jumped off a freaking building. doing something stupid, right? Well, the father already told him, don't jump, you moron. That's why don't feel sorry for your children, because as soon as they step out of your house, nobody's going to feel sorry for them. Now, you show compassion by saying, what do we need to do to solve this? That's compassion. What can we do to make us better or to make everybody better? So be aware of that. And I know a lot of people, and I'm going to be kind of machista here, women feel sorry for their kids. Men don't. Men see, we want solutions, but I guess women are the pillar of the relationship. So the kids can land on something soft, because we will not let them land on something soft. So be aware of that, and that's why men and women need to get married and show up, because they're so different. The key is that we're so different that makes the relationship unique and better for the children. So, I mean, I wish I knew then what I know now. Man, I'd be a rock star. But I'd be living in the middle of nowhere, having no TV, nothing, no contact with anything. And, you know, I hope that, well, I know this podcast was supposed to be our labs. Yeah. We have totally turned around. So I hope that the listeners don't mind. But, I mean, let's talk about labs here for a second.
I got one more.
Go.
Well, just it's another Bible story.
Go ahead.
Or maybe not a Bible story, maybe Bible study story, but in the history of like shepherds.
Go ahead.
Parents, shepherds, God, obviously a shepherd, in that same sense, the term. Stop chewing on my cords, goat. Jeez. In that realm, a story I've heard is that how shepherds used to pull back the wandering flock, or like a wandering sheep to the flock, is it would actually break the sheep's leg. And then the shepherd had to take on the job of caring for it, carrying the sheep and showing it compassion and teaching it why the hurt, like the hurt is good. So there's a bunch of weird undertones.
Compassionate, no feeling sorry for the goat.
Yeah.
You said it.
No, but he's also teaching. So obviously he used the broken leg as a teacher, but that also was to illustrate the compassion and what he's actually doing for the sheep in that realm is to protect it and to keep it close. And anyways, maybe that's not the best analogy. I remember the story better. But yeah.
No, but that's a good analogy, because that's what God said, or Jesus said, you know, who of you will not leave the flock to go get that one that is lost?
Yeah.
So, and we do that, you know, parents suffer the most when that child when the parents love their children, suffer the most when that one child is having issues, or it doesn't matter, it's economical, drugs, or whatever, they do suffer a lot, which, thank God, I never went through that. But, you know, it's pretty painful to see parents that did the best or tried the best, and their child has issues, and they question. I even question myself sometimes, even though my kids are doing amazing, but, you know, sometimes, did I make the right decision? Did I make the wrong decision? You know, and you always, I guess that's a way to deal with things as humans, but that means that you're actually thinking about what you're going to do to try to make things better. So,
that's playing in the past, and you can't change the past. You can't, and then you get into like childhood psychology. You can't change an instance that shaped like the limbic system. You know, it's just
if
like,
you stay on the past, yeah, you're depressed. If you live on the future, you're anxious.
Yeah,
the present is a gift.
Yeah, and then you start playing the what if game and like the hypothetical game in the future. No, like the closer, and that's why I've talked about it on here before. But like this, like same as what you just said, if you're living like basically if you're living in the past or living in the future, like the goal is to be in the present. A really cool book on this topic is Stumbling Upon Happiness, where...
Oh, wow. Look at Brian reading books.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, actually, that's a good book.
Yeah, but it's cool because it demystifies even how our memory works and how faded and blurry and really like inaccurate it is. So it's okay. I can't even trust my memory. And then I can't even like actually compare myself to another person, because we have these whole different scales of every emotion and instance, and every word means something different to me and you from our experience, even if it's just microscopic differences. So, okay, I can't compare myself to you. Now, actually, I'm a different person than I was yesterday. I'm definitely a different person than I was last week, 2 years ago, whatever. So I can't even compare myself to this person in the past. I shouldn't let the past weigh me now, because it's not even the same person. And so, okay, let's get rid of that. And then now nobody can predict the future. like no stock market employees, nothing. Done it consistently, any of these things. Okay, and then now how are we making choices in the future? The farther you choose in the future, the more it appears that you choose from values. It's like, okay, I think the example in the book is like, if my brother asked me next month to watch his kids while they go to some Broadway show, yeah, I'm a good brother, values-wise, I would say yes. But actually, that's the busiest day of my week. They want me to come at rush hour. I'm not thinking about execution. So really, let's demystify all of life, like demystify the past, demystify the future, and hopefully we can start bringing our scale into like 3 days behind us, 3 days in front of us, and eventually we can just walk and stumble upon this happiness. And
how old are you now? 60?
Yeah, shut up.
Shit.
Yeah, well, that is 34. But I use it when I'm coaching because like most of what I coach, mental skills wise, are things that have helped me or helped someone I know. And for me, it's storytelling and quotes. You know, it's like the right story or the right demystification of. Sorry, the goat's chewing the cords again, but just the right message at the right time, or learning a new anchor to keep me away from uncertain thoughts that are the, oh, what about the past? And then it's just like, no, like past is past is inaccurate. And then now, like the fun part of that is, well, like why I like to read to some extent now is vocabulary is huge in our memory. And if you don't have a good vocabulary, you're handcuffed by X amount of words to classify a memory. So if I say, hey, how I always use prom, like how's prom? It's supposed to be a big time in your high school, whatever. Oh, it was fun. I had a few drinks, danced, had a great time. That's five words to classify what's supposed to be like a pinnacle of a high school career, whatever. Or now you start talking about your wedding. Oh, it was great. Like all the family blood, that's eight words. But like, in order to go back and relive that, I have to sit here for 7 hours, talk about like getting my suit on and doing like all the things, but like you're never going to do that. So your mind's going to be classifying these seven words. And it's just like, okay, maybe I should get way better words so I can start to differentiate between the good and the great. Now I can, when I do look back, I can separate and hopefully chase those bigger words, you know?
It's kind of something that you said that is very significant. Words can make a war. Words can make a marriage. You know, so absolutely, I agree with you. And that's where the language Spanish is way better than English. We can describe certain scenes with 100 words that you can only describe with 5 words because the Spanish language is so, I will say, how will I call it? It has so many words for certain little scenes.
Can I get an example?
Let me think about it. If I... What's a word for door for you? How many words can you come up with?
Are we going to throw like gate? Does gate count?
Yeah, gate counts.
Wooden gate.
You know, you're adding adjectives to it. But, you know, we have like 6 or 7 words for the door,
yeah.
Which is crazy. But that's what I'm saying. Now, I will say this. I think that a person that can speak with graceful, nice words can make a huge difference in any instant. I want to bring cancer here. If I let you choose, what are the 2 most important things for survival for a cancer patient? You can pick anything you want, drugs, anything, doc, anything. Which one are the 2 most important? And I'm saying two.
I know, attitude and nutrition.
Actually, not even close, shit. Which is crazy. Not because that will be one of my answers, but no, that is not true. It is support of that person from the family members and religion, praying. It's crazy. And let me give I'm going to give you facts here because people are going to say, well, one of the biggest ones was AIDS. Remember when the AIDS was at the people were dying and drugs, homosexuals, everything was, they were all dying. And they took 4,000 people going to the ICU, meaning, you know, the sickest people they can get with the lowest white blood cell count. And they said, we're going to divide it in 2 groups. And these 2 groups are going to get the same medications. They have the same kind of disease, the same severity, everything. One group, only 17% survive at the end of 2 years. In the other group, 72% survived. What was the only difference between the 2 groups?
They prayed.
No. They had 3 nuns with pictures of the patients, and they met Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and prayed for those patients, which is, you would say, oh, 20%, 30%, you can say, oh, coincidence can do that. But when 71%...
Did the patient know they were praying for him?
All right. That is the cool thing. They did not know. Is that because the nuns have special powers? I don't know, but that is a very significant... And I see it also in my patients. You know, as soon as I have a patient that has cancer, say, I don't believe in God, dude, you're going to have it rough. It doesn't matter what. I mean, it just doesn't matter what kind of cancer. Doesn't matter how easy the cancer is. Doesn't matter how bad it is. You're in deep.
Yeah, believe in something.
Yes, you have to. You have to believe on an all-powerful thing to make it, because you know you don't want to make it. There's nothing to look forward to. That
intrigues me, just one, just from an energy standpoint, but because who knows what materializes from those, where the words are going and that kind of thing too. But I actually went, I don't even know if I want to call him a naturopath, but and I don't know if it was witchery either, but there's a place here in Columbus where they do a lot of IVs and things along those lines too, but they do, I'm blanking on the word, but I still wanted to do research on it, but they say different words out loud, like compassionate, like the whatever it ends up being, or like they'll try and, I think they're trying to like trigger words into your system, and they'll kind of like, he was moving my ankles and things along the lines at the time, and then he'd say, change these words, and it appeared like my ankles opened up, or like kind of more my hip and ankle, but I thought that was interesting.
Well, this is interesting that you say that. Okay, if you're going to look at that, I'm going to give you a little, and I show it to you, I have the books. What can I say? And I was taught by somebody in Canada about this. And he told me that how you speak to water makes a difference.
Great book, yeah.
Yes, and I said, there's no freaking way. But then, this isn't YouTube. You can go look it up.
No, it's a book. It's from Japan, I think.
Yes, it's Japanese. He's a photographer. And he started looking at water under different conditions. It can be somebody telling how much you love the water. It can be so much I hate. So the biggest sample was between Beethoven and Hitler. When Hitler, and this is on YouTube, you can look at the video. Hitler is speaking and giving his whatever. I don't know if he was taking over the Hitler. I don't know what he was doing. And you can see the water changing and going into a corner like scare. And when they play Beethoven, the fifth symphony,
yeah,
you can see the water crystallizing, being
beautifully, symmetrically, yes, things like that.
It's just insane what that can do. So words make a difference. Now, I want you to think about this. Can words make a difference? When people go work out, what kind of music do they listen to? Rock and roll, hard rock, you know, super action music or whatever, which is interesting that they do that. Is that affecting your muscles? Is that causing tears?
Yeah. That's super interesting. Well, so just for those of you listening, just so we don't skip over it, The Hidden Messages in Water by Emoto Masaru. Yes. But
you guys got to look at it, because I have, there's three books actually. I have all of them. I look at the pictures and I look at what he has done, which is incredible. But I want you guys to think about it. If what I speak to you makes a difference in your water, I'm going to go bench press, right? Now I have rock and roll, you know, deadbeat, boom, 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 action, and you're doing it, you tear your muscle. And you think, oh, I was that day that I weighed, you know, I didn't warm up. Have you ever thought, what kind of music are you playing? Do you ever tear it? You know, that they never thought about that. But if it changes the outside water, what is it doing? Your body's what percent? 60% water.
Yeah.
What is it doing to you? You never thought about that.
No, I haven't. But that's because, like, initially when I heard the words in the water, I go into, again, that childhood psychology. Like, so many of your triggers come from, like, this a whole attachment theory on whether you got left at this time. And now these words trigger you into emotional responses. And then you get into, like, the physiology world of what I've been studying recently is now that, like, basically, like, 99% of what our sensory input brings in is pre-consciousness. It doesn't even get to our, like, our level of understanding in that realm. So it's okay. And that's why I like to pursue control of physiology, because most of that's usually in the autonomic nervous system that we're not even worried about. But we can pull the breath in. That's the only thing. So it seems really important to me. But in that realm, like that whole system that's responding before it even comes into our thought, that we're talking about words. And like most of our responses are at, like, because I mean, once you become somewhat aware of language, which is more like 1.5, 2, But like that's in the big chunk of childhood psychology is 0 to 6, I believe.
Supposedly that's how we separate from other species, you know, because yeah. we can communicate with each other. That's yeah. why the smartest, like the whale and the orca, they communicate with each other because they got a we call it language, but sound. But that's why they're so much more intelligent than the rest of the other people. Or the
I've just ran into that in psychology where it's like basically they're telling me that I'm already pre-programmed for all these words and I can't change some of my reactions, but my physiological reactions, the uptick in heartbeat, the sweaty hands, things like that, where like some of that's ingrained. It's mildly changeable as you like, basically you can mimic it and try and teach a new physiological pattern.
So wait a second. So they told you couldn't change what?
In essence, the response to some of these traumas or like, I'm not even saying like crazy sexual assault traumas or anything like that. I'm saying like when you felt abandoned, like I'm still learning about attachment theory and that kind of thing too. But in that realm, the structure that you're given by 0 to 6 is very important, it appears, in what I've read. And so like it frustrates me because I'm a person that's like, okay, like I have no responsibility to the person I was 5 minutes ago. I can change. I could go be a firefighter. I can go to med school. I can dictate all these things. I can go be a monk and decide that all these words that used to trigger me don't, you know, whatever. But like I can come back and the same words are somewhat physiologically in my DNA because again, what I've learned now is that like it's not just the hippocampus that stores the factual memories. Like your amygdala kind of like tag teams your memories, and you have these physiological patterns that are remembered with either thought
association,
memory.
Association, yes.
Yeah. So okay, I mean, it's so many influences, and it's just the fact that a lot of it's pre-consciousness. It's just like okay, how do I get deeper and deeper into my like knowing myself to know that okay. Now, because like at the end of the day, regardless of what's all this information that's being processed, I still have this eternal concept of stimulus, choice, and response. And physiologically, I can slow down a little bit with my breath, so that makes sense. I'm going to spend some time there. But now it's okay. Like some of the stuff is like okay, like an animal's attacking me. Like that's different stimulus, different choice. Yes. And so now it's like now preparation comes in. It's just a whole line of hypotheticals, but at the same time, like I'm trying to gain control. And like I've been to therapy. I've done that and talked to the younger Brian and written letters to my mom and my dad and my younger self like 20 times in that realm. So it's just like I see the power of that too because I've become less reactive. I've like stop pointing fingers at a lot of things, but still like very similar things make me emotional. And so
you know, it's funny you saying that. Years ago they came with WWJD. That's yep. So stupid. But then I'm like, oh my gosh, what? I've been interested that I want to beat somebody up, right? And those 3-4 little words, what with WWJD? I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry, my fault. And I walk away.
Yeah.
It's just crazy that those 4 little words can make a difference with the and meaningful as they are. And we don't think about it, but those words can make it, they can change any situation, period.
No, and they're cool. So I use the same thing. I use quotes as logic landmarks, and they have levers for me. And I do change, but like I'm changing the consciousness, that 1% kind of maybe sometimes. But like, again, the more and it's kind of how I teach some mental skills alongside the suffocation hypoxia stuff I do. Like, you can go to a dark place, and if we keep taking you there, you get like you're less reactive. And I think to that extent, where if you keep looking in the past, just in a problem solving sense, like if I keep looking at it and I keep looking at it, I know what comes up, but like I can always just like slow it down or like get a little more comfortable there. So maybe I'm less triggered. I don't know. I'm a big believer in this. Like the word tolerance means different things to me now, because it used to only mean alcohol tolerance. So like, but now it's like CO2 tolerance is massive in my world, but now I get into this realm of like great, like not greatness, but like self-improvement, and which is overplayed. But in that realm, all of it is feedback loops. Physiologically, we're talking about like certain stimulus cause this feedback loop, and I react the same way to it until I generate a stop or I generate some application of my choice to that stimulus.
Well, it's funny you say that. And this is interesting because think about people, what they have now is an iPad or a phone. Because they can listen to other people's interactions. That's the only thing is I can do it in within seconds. And I can have that. I don't need anybody else because I can listen to people talking to each other on those things, which is a huge mistake because you don't develop socially. Just it's crazy. But when we're listening to words, and let me see where I'm going with this, because I have children in my office that I deliver that the parents like to watch mystery movies or monster movies or, you know, Hell or Friday the 13th. And I always used to tell them, I said, don't look at those pictures or don't look at those movies with your kids because that's going to affect them. And I'm going to tell you, absolutely made a difference in those children now. You can tell they have anxiety. And I know they're going to say, oh, that's a correlation or an association. But the problem is that it's true, you know, you see it over and over. And I know doctors do not ask their clients or the patients. When I'm going through my history, I will ask, what kind of movies do you watch? And they look at me like, what? Why are you asking me that? Because are you watching Dracula? Are you watching Friday 13? Your seven-year-old sitting with you there watching that shit. What do you think that kid's going to be scared? That kid is going to be, oh my God, there's all this hate. There are all these things going out. They will. That's why movies, when they have those new video games that they shoot everybody, that does, hey, I see it all the time. It's not a big deal. So be aware of those things. And I think that we are, and we're talking about still about words. I think we're in a world that the words make such a huge, huge difference with the condition that they truly, that the meaning of those words is real. Remember what I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, I'm leaning into that for a second. But yeah, but like, words carry an incredible amount of weight. Yeah.
Yes. As long as they're truthful, those words can make or destroy a person. Words that are said, lying, all those things, they destroy again. And that's why words are so important. And again, God gave you a list of things. Do not lie, you know, do not do these things. And it's very important for us to actually understand that you can make a difference every day. My father used to tell me, you know, they say, oh, count to 10 before you're going to say something. My father said, no, count to 60. I go, what the hell, 60? By that time, I forgot what the hell you said. And he was like, exactly.
Yeah, it's a words game.
Yes.
So part of like that stumbling upon happiness memory or book is the memory of short-term memory, where it's like we very inaccurately remember like what happened 3 seconds ago, because really our brain's like this pretty much like a big deletion machine. Like we're taking in like 12 million bits of information, and really the only thing we're hanging on to is like what keeps us alive and like standing and balanced.
Yes.
And then like what we like intentionally like put our focus on. And a lot of times that's not always words. Like and that's why I think 3D interaction is important. It kind of sneaks in here where it's like, if you're the only thing you have is words, that's why I'll never have a serious conversation via text anymore. I've learned that.
You can't say something that totally that the other person takes it.
I've learned that from ex.
Oh yes, yeah. You have.
But in that realm, like, okay, like what that we need to approach life with all these layers, and like words, again, super heavy, but then now there's the context around them, and then the tone they're delivered in, and like the words. So like, it's kind of weird there. It's like a paradox where like words are heavy if they're understood. So now it's like,
yeah. That's the key word, understood. And that's why text messages are awful too, because you can say something that you didn't mean to, but the other person is going to take it. Or when you leave a comma out.
Yeah.
You know, that means a whole, that changed the whole freaking paragraph.
Yeah.
And I know you're laughing, but.
No, it's, I've had this conversation as of late, and I'm trying to remember, Laura had one that somebody sent one time, and it's like, damn, it's in my phone. I put it in there, so damn funny. It's something like beautiful on the end of it. And it's like, fuck. That's going to bother me, but it's
look it up.
Yeah, I'm looking up. It's in my phone here.
I mean,
it's like, I'm going to find you beautiful. That's not it. Hold on. Give me 1 second. But in that same capacity, dude, this cat's going to destroy me from allergy standpoint.
He seems to like you. He's sitting.
So this, you can't hide, like, so the saying, like, you can't hide beautiful, like, you can't, like, if the inner beauty, maybe, I don't know what it's in reference to, but now it's, you can't hide, comma, beautiful, like, you can't hide from me, kind of. Yes. Deal. I thought, like, that commas are important.
Yes, yeah. That's right. You can't hide beautiful. Yeah. That's a whole different meaning. Same sentence, but a different meaning.
Yeah.
So I like that. That's just, it's crazy how, again, be careful, count to 60, like my dad used to tell me. Like, you forget what the other person says sometimes. My wife, when she pisses me off, you know, I used to count to 5 because I wanted to react. Then I go to 10, and then I remember my dad. And now I like, sit there, and so I'm like, what are you staring at? And I'm like, counting because I'm on the way there, I forgot what the hell we were talking about, you know?
Yeah.
And then she gets a little mad at me. What, you forgot already? I go, no, it's because I was going to give you a stupid answer. Now I'm not. Where I don't think it's stupid. It might be so stupid, but you know.
Yeah, but I also think back to that quote, like, a healthy organism, like, is one that experiences short-term emotions.
Yes.
I think I twisted it again. But in that realm, like, that makes really sense. Like, it's unhealthy to carry on emotions, like particularly the heavy ones, like the angers, the resentments, all these things. And, like, and it's okay. Like, I'm an animal in an environment, if you want to break it down simpler, but, like, I'm going to experience the whole spectrum of emotions. And I get into this when I talk identity, and this is more like an Awareness by Anthony DeMello book concept, but I've seen it hold true, just because now that I'm speaking to high schools in that realm, like, I see that the kids are identifying as, I am depressed, I have ADHD, I'm anxious, I have anxiety. And it's like, okay, like, they actually said I can't phrase things like that in front of the kids, because, like, it attacks kids that really think they have something, so that I'm calling them a liar or something like that. But really, it's like, let's sit back and, like, okay, like, you have anxiety, but you just laughed, you know? So, like, okay, I can experience happiness while I'm sad. I can start crying when I'm happy. And it's like, I'm going to experience this whole spectrum where it's like, okay. And like, if you're going to identify, like, I've said it on the podcast before, but, like, I don't even want to say I'm happy. Like, because, like, when I'm not happy, then, like, there's a gap, and now I'm, like, suffering because I'm not happy. But, like, and on the scale of happiness and sadness, or happiness and depression, like, I want to experience happiness more and experience sadness. But, like, I can't just beat myself up when I'm down here. And if I identify, so, like, and I always say, there's a world of difference between saying I'm experiencing depression and I'm depressed. That's identifying with the emotion.
Absolutely. And or so, you can say I'm sad, yeah, which is a very short
version of that. Yes. But so, when you say I'm this, you're identifying with it, and you're making it a long-term emotion.
You're labeling yourself as such as that, yeah, what it is.
Yeah, and we already see the power of identity. Like, you can say religious identity, political identity, your title,
sexual identity.
Yeah, whatever. And, like, and those get really defensive really quick. Even people's diets are, like, fall in that category.
Well, you know, vegetarians have a cult.
Yeah, but it's okay. But, like, I have this theme on the podcast now, just this life transition where it's like, you can't even identify with being a dad right now because you're eventually gonna be a grandpa, you know? So it's just like, you're gonna experience this whole spectrum of life. And, like, it just, the less we care about these words, some of these words, like, the better. Like I'm not gonna go into, like, the religious side, because I think that's a whole different level of life. But yeah, it makes life a little easier if, like, these words aren't everything, and, like, they can be weights, they can be ankle weights or whatever.
I remember when I was a kid, you know, they would call you names. Now if somebody calls your name, you know, it's a big deal. They call your parents, and I mean, my dad said, just be a soap, you know?
Yeah.
Let it slide. Don't worry about it. Which, you know, and I was a soap for a long time. I still a soap. You can say whatever. I don't care. And then what I'm going with this is, I think that if we are taught patience, love, and respect, I think we're okay. We'll have it. Now, one important thing that you said, we are labeling, as physicians, this is our fault. We label you, and let me give you a very good example. My nurse practitioner saw a lady Wednesday, and she is depressed, right? She used the word depressed. And I said, why is she depressed? Where her daughter died last year. I said, that is a normal emotion. It's not that she's depressed. She has sadness and an emptiness, which is a normal reaction to something that she values as maybe the most she can value in her life.
Yeah.
That is not depression. That is a grief. What happens, we need happiness with a pill, which, by the way, those pills don't make you happy. They make you indifferent. They make you don't care, which is a whole different ball of wax there. Now you're not depressed, you just don't care, which is a version of depression. You don't care about anything. So the labeling of any condition makes me very angry because they give me the permission to prescribe you a drug. Oh, you're depressed? I can give you a drug. Or you're this, I can give you a drug. And that's what we have been doing.
It's a word problem, partially.
It is a word problem. Now we're becoming so stupid that we're humanizing dogs. Oh, my dog has anxiety. Oh, my dog has this. It's funny. I can beat the crap out of my dog, and 5 minutes later, we're playing a game. You know, was he depressed? Of course, no, he wasn't depressed, but they're okay. Oh, it's depression. You know, the crap. No. We need to be, I hate that. We're trying to freaking humanize or label freaking everything. And sometimes we cannot, emotions are like a fire. They can be light up one second and another second they're down.
So we both know Rudy Reyes. He was on the podcast as well. And he had like a sensei or some martial arts teacher basically, like, I guess, give it to him in a story in that realm. And I think the saying was like sa, like, so when you say sa, like when you're punching and stuff, it means die. And that's your feelings die because they are the most volatile. You don't want to fight just true emotion. You don't want to fight with these feelings. And he makes an incredible point that how have we given so much power to everybody's feelings when they're so fleeting, when they're and these feelings, emotions, like, again, if you're healthy, they should be fleeting and they shouldn't influence politics and they shouldn't influence like your finances. And
your podcast is going to be race.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're going to cancel me quick. But I just, this is the first, we always have questions and we always shoot the shit to some extent, but I mean, this was intended to be a Blood Labs podcast. I think we're going to have to push that to another one. I'm going to say this is the boys talking life this time. But like,
I like that. But
this is a different side of life. Yeah,
I know. But we're glad that we discussed it because I want to tell people out there. You know, when you have a death, when you move, when you lose your job, when you get divorced, when you lose your job, all those things are reasons to be sad, not be depressed. It's just an emotion. Make it you're sad because, yes, something's really happened that is hurting you and you need to be sad. But are you depressed? No, don't use the word depressed because that means I'm going to be sad. Look at me. I'm going to be sad. No, I'm going to be down all the time because that happened. No, yes, I'm going to grieve. I got to keep going. I cannot continue this state of mind. I got to move on. I got to move to the, I got to do something about it. That's when I don't feel sorry. I show compassion.
Yeah, and that's where the patience is huge. And because, again, this bleeds into the medical world too, but we want all these fixes now. Mm-hmm. And we want to not be sad now.
Yes.
But
it can happen.
But like these emotions are great teachers. These instances in life of death and all these other hardships and adversities are teachers. Mm-hmm. And it's just like why do you not want to get your whole experience? Mm-hmm. And it kind of comes full circle to where it's like, and that's the reason why I've been pulled to military and that kind of thing, because I want to know that side of my experience and experience the whole, like, what life has to offer in that realm. And emotions are part of it, but they come in waves. They are extremely fleeting, but then, and as long as you don't identify with them, like, your emotions are going to change and you need some patience. You know, you need some, like, time is always a variable that we, like, right now, and I'm the same way. Like, I want a lot of shit right now and I can't have it because some things take time. Wisdom takes time and experience. And so, like, if you never experience sadness because you grab a pill or you you don't know because now you have no metric. So now maybe you have no, again, tolerance of sadness. So every time, well, maybe like 3 raindrops fall and now I'm destroyed. I'm
because it's going to rain.
Yeah.
Storm. Yeah. That's pretty wisdom there because it's rain a little bit. Oh my God, it's a storm. It was a storm, which it was not, you know?
And it's so, like, well, it's just like, because just down at Sorenex now, originally, like, I pull in on Thursday, and it's supposed to pour the whole weekend. And like you hear some people just like, oh no, 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 no. And then like two of the nights end up being gorgeous and it was awesome. And it's just like, one, the weather's never right anyways, but two, like, why are you gonna even just add any anxiousness to your future when you, it's out of your control anyways? Let's go back to what's in our control, what's out of our control.
Absolutely. Just give you the wisdom to know what you can control and not control. And, otherwise,
and again, like, life is going to impact your emotions, and but you do have some ability to like sit with your emotions, be patient, feel, learn, grow, and then again, like, give it time. And
something bad is going to happen to you in your life. Doesn't matter what. It can be a death of your closest person. It can be, you know, lost birth. I mean, it is crazy, but always something is going to happen. And don't think that is you're not going to happen to anybody. You know, I deal with tragedies all the time. And, you know, for example, I got a phone call from a good friend that her best friend was, or one of her best friends was going to Thanksgiving dinner with her husband and the two children. And on the way there, to meet with the pastor of the church, a truck hit them, killed, decapitated the father, killed the daughter on the back, and only her and the other daughter survived. And, you know, how can you, I mean, like, she's asking me, what can you say? And I can't.
Yeah,
I don't have an answer. I just, you know, say, God, thank you, God, that both of them survived, actually.
Yeah.
And I'm going to look at it, hey, the father and the other daughter died. I just don't, I mean, hopefully I will never go through that, but that's just tragedy that will make me sad, actually. Will it make me depressed? No, it made me very, very sad, and it was painful. But, I mean, I have to say, the other two people have to go on. And that's, they need the support of the system, of the other people, all their friends, which she said, I'm a psychologist. This lady's a psychologist. And I went there, I didn't know what to say. And I said, that's exactly correct. That's what you have to do. You sit there and listen to what she has to say and don't say a word. Because sometimes holding that hand is better than anything.
No, I wish I had journaled a little bit while I was down there, because this guy down there, because we had, like, I'm a bit super guilty of this. When somebody tells me their problem or how bad they're feeling or something, I try and fix it.
And, yes, you can do that.
No, I know. And that's, and it's one of my, like, not my least favorite parts about myself, but because I just, like, I do think it's coming from a good place. Like, I care and I'm compassionate, but it's not my job. And it's not my responsibility, but it's also like, I think it's a good response, but like, I have to learn a barrier where it's like, okay, like, I'm like, if you need anything, I'm here for you. Like, I'm not going to say the perfect thing, even though I want to say the perfect thing and hand you the perfect quote that goes, oh, you're right. Everything's fine. Like, I wish that was that cool and that easy. But in that realm, like, it's, I think, again, like, so now you're talking about the absence of words being powerful and like, but also, yeah, now I'm
that's why God gave you 2 ears and one tongue, my boy.
And that's, and I think that's a massive lesson too. And it's something I've gone through those routes too, where like, I try, like, cause I try and put myself in rooms with people like you and like bigger brains and that kind of thing. And I always, out of insecurity, I try and talk sometimes in that realm. And I've learned now just like, soak it up and let, so you can add value or you can ask a question, you know.
You know what? They can only know you're stupid if you speak.
Yeah.
Because if you don't speak, they don't know that you're stupid, right?
Yeah.
You might be stupid, but he never said a word. What kind of person is he, you know?
Yeah, but like, again, same with all these things, like, same with the five people you're around, like, and again, I'm going to keep pounding the journal home until it's dead for the most part, but like, unless you know, like, unless you keep track of this kind of thing, like, or like, when I'm speaking, when I'm not speaking, like, I fall into bad habits constantly if I don't monitor what I'm truly doing and where it's giving me friction, because then I'll get in this regret phase, like, why'd you even talk, Brian? Just like, just shut up and learn. And it's just like, and like, because
you're getting wiser, dude.
Well,
it's
just like a frustration thing where it's like, okay, like, that, like, they're doctors. They know about physiology. Shut up. You know, it's just like, because I only got so many tools right now, but I'm learning. But in that realm, it's just funny what emotions show up and return. And then again, now you start talking words and silence. And just like, hey, let's hopefully everybody listening got something from this in some capacity, where it's just like words are powerful. I really do think that like there's something to those books about water and words, and like, okay, like now that's where another, like kind of one of my New Year's resolutions this year was to improve my personal self-talk, because I beat myself up so much. Because there's a lot of things I want to do, like physically, mentally, emotionally, relationships, those kind of things. And if I don't get to them, like I beat myself up, or if I don't hit a workout, I beat myself up, and those kind of things when I need more and I coach it. But sometimes I'm a hypocrite in the realm of like grit and grace, where like you need to have this work capacity, but you need to have grace translated. Obviously grace not translated to the Bible, but like you need to be a little bit softer on yourself. Yes. You need to be patient. Allow time to do its, again, undefeated thing of keep moving on regardless of what I think, you know?
You know, I've seen this podcast. It should make a difference in some people. I know it was kind of wordy, I would say. Let's use the word wordy.
Yeah.
But I hope people were listening, because if you sit down, you're going to go, oh, wow, I remember Brian said this. Or let me be quiet. Or don't let me say anything right now, but wait for the moment. You guys, I hope that there was some wisdom to this podcast today. Because you even taught me stuff, you know, I'm laughing because thinking, how old is this guy again? Damn it.
No, well, I'm just going to be soap from here on. So, like, anyway, no, but anyways, Doc, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad it went the complete this. For those listening, this was legitimately going to be specifically like
for labs,
blood work, and like what to look for, why you should measure. And next one, we'll get another one soon with Doc, but thank you.
Okay, listen, listeners. Ooh. If you guys have some labs that you would like to present to us, you don't have to use your name. You don't have to say nothing. Send them to Brian, and we'll look at them, and we'll talk about those labs.
And so where you send them would be chasingedgespod@gmail.com. So that's chasingedgespod@gmail.com.
He was really thinking, by the way, guys.
Yeah, well, I got this bit now where I said, I always get put in positions where I gotta like add up different things. I was like, I don't do public math anymore, okay? But now I'm not gonna do public spelling either. So, but yeah, so chasingedgespod@gmail.com. Send your labs there. You can black out your name. If not, I'll black them out anyways. I think that's maybe HIPAA or something. But
I just don't want people to know.
Yeah.
But I will go through your blood test even without history, and just so you guys learn how to do them.
Yeah, and it's just again a lot of it from just what I've like watched and absorbed from you. Just these little nuances that can eventually actually carry a massive amount of weight on just your feeling, and for me, my testosterone. So, and it's just with like vitamin awareness, and even like you get into the metals. I think it's really fun just to see some little tricks and tune-ups.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyways, thank you guys for
you.
If you stayed on this long, thank you for sticking with the boys. Be well.
Bye. Yeah.